Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Today we have a discussion about the health care provided here by the Department of Veterans Affairs, the VA. Our recent three-part series on local VA health care included a lot of criticism of the VA operation. With me in studio from the VA St. Louis health care system are Keith Repko, Medical Center Director, and Dr. Michael Crittenden, the system's Chief of Staff. Gentlemen, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for the opportunity of coming.
Thanks for having us.
Keith, let me start with you. Can we stipulate at the very beginning that there are some problems with delivering health care in this system here?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We're not perfect. We have come a long way. We are not your grandpa's VA from the 80s and the 90s. And more importantly, hopefully, we're not the VA 10 years from now, or even 5 years from now, or 2 years from now, that we are today. We want to be constantly improving, and we've come a long way, but we've got a long way to go.
And Dr. Crittenden, you said in the piece that aired last week that veterans here are getting world-class health care.
That's correct, and we absolutely believe that. Every interaction we have, our providers have, with patients, with our veterans, you know, in the clinic, you know, in the operating room, on the wards, in our procedural areas are all world-class. Those providers are doing the absolute best that they can for that patient in front of them, and I strongly believe that, and I've witnessed that.
Some of the things that came up in the series that, and I should point out, as you well know, that that our reporter, producer of the piece, talked to a number of people who were critical, and that was the gist of it. They were talking about the complicated benefits application process. Numerous vets say that the VA turned a deaf ear to the requests that they have. Some cases, there were life and death delays, the battle to have disability claims approved, that sort of thing. They justified complaints?
So Dr. Crittenden and I aren't experts on the disability side. That's a different branch of the VA. We are the healthcare side of the VA. But I can tell you from the big VA's perspective, they've done a lot of work to try and streamline the process for claims for disability. There's now an EZ application that is significantly shorter than it was 5 or 6 years ago. They're working with Congress to try and even create a shorter process for that. But again, we're not the experts on the disability. That's the VBA side of VA. We're the healthcare side.
How about the whole process, though, the benefits application process? Is that something you can address?
Again, the benefits is handled by a different branch of the VA. We're strictly just the healthcare side. But like I said, I can tell you, I got a briefing 2 weeks ago that they're working with Congress, and they have to have some Congress changing of laws to streamline some of that application. And they're working hard because Congress right now is – as invested in the VA as they ever have been in trying to cut through a lot of the red tape.
Dr. Crittenden, why isn't this the same VA of 10 years ago?
Well, there are a lot of changes. One, just the emphasis on access, that we know the access issue that was addressed in Phoenix. We work very hard to improve and to make our access as good as it can be. So, for instance, in primary care and specialty care and mental health, you can be seen in about 7 days. The technology that we have at this particular VA has increased exponentially. Every piece of diagnostic equipment that you would find at Barnes or MoBAP or SLU, we have here. We have world's experts on endocrinology, cardiac surgery, and medical disorders that work for us. Some of the patients who, some of the doctors who are in the St. Louis Magazine as the best doctors in the area also work for us. And we have an emphasis on population health. The VA has always been interested in population health and has been a leader in healthcare systems around the world in addressing population health. So when we look at mental health, diabetic care, cardiovascular care, the systems that we have in place to not just address disease when it confronts us in the clinic or in the operating room, but to prevent disease, to keep people happy, to keep veterans healthy, that we lead in that area as well.
If I can just add, you know, as far as access goes, about 4 years ago, we, the VA here in St. Louis, embarked on a mission to significantly improve our access. At the four and five years ago, we were among the lowest in the nation in the VA as far as access for veterans, meaning the long wait times for veterans. Their ability to get in wasn't where we wanted it to be. So we embarked on multiple prongs to change that. Probably the most significant was a significant hiring of frontline providers, doctors and nurses. Over the last 4.5 years, we have hired an additional 800 staff members. So about a third of our size we have increased, a third of our organization we have increased in size to better meet the access. And now we're one of the leaders in the VA as far as lowest wait times and being able to get veterans in. Because if it, as Dr. Crittenden says, even if we have world-class care, if the veterans don't have access to it, it doesn't do any good.
That seems to be one of the big complaints nationally, is the access situation and the fact that that staffing is down. Are you fully staffed now?
We are, well, I would say we're still continuing to grow, but we have 800 more staff on than we did 4.5 years ago. So we were at about 2,200 staff. We're at 3,000 now. We're more than we ever have been staff. We still have some needs, not unlike the whole rest of the St. Louis community area. Nursing is, there are nurses out there that want to come and put in their application. We would certainly warrant it because we're always looking for more nurses.
Yeah, there's a reason why nursing shortage, and you know, we're faced with that problem as well. But, you know, we are addressing it. We have job fairs and actually offer bonuses for nurses to join our organization.
What about doctors? Are you fully staffed with physicians?
We're fully staffed with physicians. However, our emphasis on access has gotten to the point where we need more primary care physicians, and we're looking to hire more primary care physicians because the demand for primary care services has increased.
Yeah, we're looking to expand. So right now we have 10 points of care sites in the St. Louis metropolitan area, places where veterans can get primary care. And four of them were approved and are in the next 6 to 8 months. We'll be expanding the number of primary care providers and teams that we have there. So we're continuing to grow, even with the significant growth we've had in the past.
There have been various surveys taken, which are not particularly favorable to the operation there. There's a report that I'm being referred to here on the computer that was released in 2017, rating the St. Louis VA second out of number two out of five on a five-star scale. Let me say that again. Out of five on a five-star scale. That doesn't sound very positive.
It isn't, and it's not where we want to be. Yeah. We've been working hard this last year to change that. And so let me explain a little bit how that scoring works. It's a comparative. So it compares us to all of the other VAs. So there's always 20% that are going to be one star, always 20% that are going to be two star, you know, and so on up, because it's a comparative ranking. Yeah. So we are a two-star, have been this last year. We're not happy being a two-star. We have many programs in place, and we believe that we are on the verge of becoming a three-star. Again, not where we want to be, nor do we think that that's representative of the care that we're providing. A lot of it is things, processes we need to improve, and we're actively doing that.
Well, the Post-Dispatch has also done a survey, and I have in my notes here that this operation here was fifth worst out of 141 VA centers. Is that something you've seen? Does that sound right?
In the past, that is correct.
In the past.
And we're working hard. In fact, Senator Claire McCaskill puts out a survey every year, her own survey, and she started it, I believe, about 6 years ago. And back then, we were not highly ranked. As one of the questions is, you know, would you recommend this facility? What kind of care do you give? Do you like the care? This last year, she actually sent us the report and put in comments like she's seen much more significant positive responses. In fact, now we're in the 70% to 80% range of positive responses as opposed to the 50% range we were for years ago. So, but again, we've got a long way to go.
Yeah, but we're working hard on it, though. As an example, we received a letter from Undersecretary Sloan Gibson telling us that we were among the fastest risers in the cell rating system than any other medical center in the country.
How did it get to this position, do you think, where the surveys show that there's a wide level of dissatisfaction?
I think in the past we were not what the organization we needed to be. You know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, we were not the customer service, the veteran-focused organization we needed to be, that we're striving to become now. I think there was a sense of it's an entitlement rather than they've earned the right attitude previously in the VA that we are working to eradicate so that we become veteran-focused and, you know, for everyone to remember that's why we're here.
Well, veteran-focused, yeah, it is the VA.
Absolutely.
It certainly should be veteran-focused.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What about the medical care, Dr. Crittenden? Some of the things we heard in the reporting that we had on last week was that the doctors there are really they're pill pushers. They are people never saw the same doctor twice, and they didn't feel that they were getting the standard of care that they were led to expect from the VA.
So there are a couple of different points there. So one, let's talk about seeing a different doctor. We educate residents from Washington University and St. Louis University. So some of those residents may rotate, and that may be a reason why they saw a different doctor, because that resident was at the end of their rotation and moved on to a different hospital. Now, we have very strong systems in place for resident supervision. So every resident works under the guidance in collaboration with an attending doctor who is fully boarded in that specialty to take care of folks. In terms of pill pushers, that's another one that I'd like to address, because I think that's an allegation that I wouldn't support. We have a doctor who's in charge of a pain service, and he works very hard to see patients and offer them other modalities of care so that they won't have to get a pill to address their pain. We have pain specialists who can perform procedures like injections in and around the spine to help, you know, with pain. And I'm happy to say that our medical center has been designated as a center for whole health, which is a complementary healthcare system where instead of prescribing pain medication, we can prescribe yoga or Tai Chi, acupuncture, or meditation to help with that. And patients find that a much better alternative than taking narcotics. So, you know, I heard that, and I know that we don't have that issue. Or, as you well know, and probably you've done a show on this, you know, the opioid crisis in America is one that is not strange or not present in the VA. We certainly have to deal with that as well. But I would say that we're ahead of the game in that regard. In particular, we have pharmacists and pain specialists. These are primary care doctors assigned to every PAC team at all those 10 points of care that Keith talked about. So, I mean, we take pain seriously, and we're not pill pushers. There are people who need pills. There are people who it is appropriate to prescribe narcotic medications. But we have so many other modalities to treat that, you know, I think that connection was inappropriate.
If I can just interject, over the last year or two where the VA has been trying to be on the front edge of taking the opiate addiction problem seriously and leading the charge against it, if anything, we're getting criticized probably more often than not on veterans complaining about not being able to. Why do I have to try all these other modalities before I can get pain pills?
Well, this is something you hear from time to time as well, is the number of veterans complain here and elsewhere that they got started on the opioid problem through the VA. You've heard that before. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear that about every hospital, virtually
right.
every doctor in the country. I have to take a break. I'll do that now, but very, very quickly. I'll start with you, Keith. Do you feel like you're on the defensive, as given the job that you have, generally that you're on the defensive?
I think not. I think a few years ago, yes. I'd say now we're looking forward.
Yeah. How about you, Dr. Crittenden?
No, I absolutely feel like we're looking forward. I think there's a lot of things to be proud of, and things that I'm very happy to brag about for our VA. Yeah. Absolutely.
We'll take that break now and come back and continue a conversation about health care provided by the VA here in St. Louis. My guests in studio are Keith Repko, the medical director of the VA here, and Dr. Michael Crittenden, the system's chief of staff. Back with more in a moment. If you'd like to get into the conversation, come on in. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet to STL on air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Now back to our discussion about VA healthcare in St. Louis with Keith Repko, medical director at the system here, and Dr. Michael Crittenden, chief of staff at the VA hospital here. I mentioned a moment ago, did you feel you were on the defensive? I should point out, I think most people are aware that the vast majority of people that get treated there are probably happy with the treatment they're getting. There are some people who aren't, and you admit that there's some justification for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Let's take a phone call now from someone who is happy with the treatment he's getting. I think you deserve that. Jeff in St. Charles, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say I've got an excellent service from the VA. Every time I've gone there, the doctors, the nurses, wonderful. Your emergency department's a little slow, but besides that, you know, thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your service.
Another issue that that came up last week concerned the feeling that many of the patients had that they really had to have family members. Dr. Crittenden, this one for you, really had to have family members there with them just to kind of oversee the kind of treatment they were getting.
Yes. Well, you know, I remember that from the show, and what I my answer to that was that I think having family there is a best practice. Now, because I think that there are times when patients don't understand what the doctor is saying and the family can help translate. There are times when the patient is tired and cannot advocate fully for themselves and the family member can do that. And let me be clear, I don't think that there's a requirement that a family member ought to be there, that, you know, the nurses and doctors that come see the patient at the bedside or talk to the patient in the clinic should be as clear-minded and have a conversation that is easy for a layperson to understand. But, you know, I practice this myself. If my relative is going to the hospital and I can go or my family member can go, it is always a help, particularly if they're elderly or particularly if they have complicated problems. I know as a heart surgeon that there are times when you say something to the patient and they try and relate it to the family that the message gets all jarbled up. So having more family members there to hear what you're saying and be able to ask questions, I think, helps. So, you know, I think patients need advocates everywhere from physicians to nurses to even the housekeeper that comes by, you know, the bedside. But the family is an advocate that I think is only a strength.
And I think we should point out that this is something that physicians in the civilian world, if I can put it that way, also encourage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You mentioned something that was another issue that was raised I'd like to have you address, and that is some of the people we talked to, and we talked to 17 or 20 people or something like that, were complaining that they often had difficulty at times understanding the doctors because they're foreign-born and didn't speak English that well. That seems like a real detriment to good care, perhaps.
Well, you know, we don't have any requirement in terms of where a physician, where they're a citizen of, that they can come from any country as long as they, you know, have the proper boards and pass their examinations. I would say the vast majority of our physicians and only a very small minority are such where you would think their accent would be heavy enough that it would be difficult to understand. But, you know, I think that's a rare case. We have plenty of foreign-born doctors who speak the King's English even better than some of our U.S.-born citizens.
Yes. You know, and I'll just say that, you know, we are not unlike the whole medical field, you know, in or outside of the VA in that regards, that there is a significant subpopulation of foreign-born medical physicians both in the VA and outside the VA, mm-hmm. and I don't think where there's any significant difference between the VA and the outside.
But they are required, are they not, to be American citizens?
They are not.
They are not required.
No.
I was under the impression that that was stipulated in your website.
That they can be working on their citizenship if they are not citizens. Yep. Oh. But we do give preferential treatment to United States citizens.
Right.
On the positions.
Let me back up a little bit with you, Keith. Early on, you said there are certain areas in which you are working to make it better. What are some of those areas in particular?
So the big three that we in St. Louis are putting emphasis on is access, which we touched a little bit about. Mm-hmm. You know, we've added 800 staff. We're continuing to add more staff in primarily three areas: primary care, mental health, and rehab. Another area that we're touching on and focusing on, and that is gaining the veterans' trust. And by doing outreach programs, appreciative of your opportunity to come here this morning, to try and gain the trust of the veterans to utilize us. And two things that points I want to make there. One is it really breaks my heart, and I go to veteran organizations all the time, every month, and when I ask them, how many are you getting care at the VA? And some of the hands go up, some don't. And I ask those that don't, why don't you get your care at the VA? And many of them say, well, it's for somebody more deserving. Or I don't want to take that resource away from somebody else. Or what kills me is the older veterans who say, you know, I don't want to take, if I go, I'm going to be occupying resources that our young vets need. And that's not the truth at all. If you've donned that uniform and you have been in the service, you have earned that right. You're not taking that right away from another veteran by coming. And so to get that word out is paramount on us.
That is one of the issues that came up in the three-part series, too. The trust was an issue.
Yep.
And this is what kind of befuddles me, is the fact that given an organization like the VA, with the record that it's had, you know, certainly since World War II, and all the good it's done with all the programs that it has, is how did this erosion of trust happen? What happened along the way?
Well, I think a couple of things. I think we, for a period of time, we in the VA years ago lost focus on what our true core was, why we're here. And as you pointed out, veterans, it's in our name. That should be everything that we do. And I think the other thing is we are held to a higher standard than many of our counterparts. And I would say that's probably, we need to be held to our kind. When we're dealing with veterans who are the heroes of you know, our citizenship, and we're dealing with taxpayer money, we need to be held to a little higher standard. So because that standard is higher on than many of the other, our counterparts, we're under a higher scrutiny. And part of that scrutiny means we're criticized for things that are happening everywhere else in the United States, outside of the VA, but it's mm-hmm. comes to light more in the VA because we're so transparent.
No, absolutely. I think, you know, we're talking about why we aren't our father's or our grandfather's VA. The drive for transparency is something that is different than you'd find in the non-VA sector. And that's not to say that they're not making efforts in that regard, but transparency has been something that has been critical, you know, ever since I've been in the VA. And I think another aspect is patient safety. There's a National Center for Patient Safety. I understand you had an astronaut in the building a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
Actually, an astronaut led our National Center for Patient Safety as he became an ER doctor. And, you know, when we think about the root cause analyses that we do, the monitoring of medications, et cetera, that the VA has led the way in terms of patient safety as a total system effort to improve care.
Given what's been going on in terms of military action, if you will, since 9/11, mm-hmm. is it fair to say that maybe part of the issues that you face is that you're overwhelmed because we have so many veterans coming back now with all sorts of medical problems?
I think that was early on. I think 5-10 years ago, that was the case, and we were a little slow to react. And like I said, we've added 800 staff here to catch up finally, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to take one more call, then we're going to have to wrap this up. William's joining us from St. Louis. William, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. I appreciate your program. Thank you very much for having it on.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I have a couple of comments to make that I don't think the whole truth is being told. First of all, the physicians, in my experience, at John Cochran Hospital aren't properly supervised. There's a lot of third-year medical students there, and you don't always get to see a resident. Furthermore, a lot of the physicians practicing in the emergency room haven't even passed their national or state board. And it's my understanding that doctors can practice medicine at the VA without having to pass those boards. I, as a naval veteran, am very bitter about the kind of care that's being issued. At one time, I was given medicine for cholesterol prematurely, and as a consequence, I came down with type 2 diabetes. And the VA has yet to admit culpability. Furthermore, my friend of 50 years went down.
We're fading that.
And he died.
William, thank you for the call. We are running out of time, and I want to have an opportunity to address those points. Dr. Crittenden, would you care to respond?
Certainly. So we do have medical students from St. Louis University and Washington University, but we have very strict rules that we follow very carefully about resident supervision and medical student supervision, that they cannot act independently, certainly not medical students, and even residents cannot act independently. They act in concert with a supervising attending physician. In terms of boards, there is a VA rule that if you are licensed in any state in the United States, that you can practice at a VA. So there's no requirement to have Missouri boards if you work at the St. Louis VA. You need to have a license in the District of Columbia or Louisiana or Alaska, but you don't have to have a state license here.
Does a patient have the option of seeing a resident as opposed to a full-fledged physician?
Well, typically every veteran who's there for care will see a resident that's supervised, but this would be a high-level resident at the end of their training. To see someone, particularly in a medicine clinic, they may see a resident, but that resident is supervised and collaborates with an attending physician. On the wards in the operating room, there's always an attending physician there. Very strict rules for that we adhere to and monitor. There is no medical student that is seeing someone independently and making, medical decisions. They may see them to say hello or to do an examination, to tell the patient what progress there is. But, their role is ancillary to the main team.
I'm going to have to leave it at that. Keith, you want a final thought before we say goodbye?
Just a final thought is, veterans, also, you don't have to get all of your care with us. You can pick and choose. If you want to get just a shot, your flu shot with us, you want to get just your prescription medications, or you want to get your open heart surgery, all of your care with us. It's myth busting. It's not an all or nothing with us.
All righty. Well, I want to thank you both, Keith Repko and Dr. Michael Crittenden, for being with us today and talking with us about the level of care that folks are receiving here.
We greatly appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for having us.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.